Greetings and welcome into the CBMW podcast, your refuge from the sexual revolution and safe space from our culture's gender insanity. I'm Jonathan Swan, executive editor of Icon, a journal for biblical anthropology, and I am joined by the president of CBMW, Denny Burke, and CBMW's executive director, Colin Smothers. Brothers, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you very much, man. Glad to be here.
Hey, so how many Christmas trees you guys have up yet?
You know, my rule is no Christmas till after Thanksgiving, John. You know that.
I
do have a.
No,
we
I did
moved
not
into
know
this
that.
New house. Yeah, we moved into this new house in Wichita, and there's like a tiny little Christmas tree right in front of our house. I mean, it looks like a Christmas tree.
Nice.
So I've been, ever since we moved into this house, waiting to decorate that thing because it's like a perfect setup. So outside, yeah. We're going to have an awesome Christmas tree.
The rule.
I love it.
The rule. At our house is you're not allowed to get into Christmas until after Thanksgiving. So 12 a.m. Thanksgiving night, you can't start getting into Christmas before that because it's a total slight to Thanksgiving. And also, unless you're a sociopath, you're just not going to start up Christmas, you know, before Thanksgiving is over. So I'm not trying to be dogmatic.
Shots fired.
I'm not trying to be dogmatic, but, you know, I think I'm right about this and everybody else is wrong.
Yeah, no, not to be dogmatic at all. Well, I live amongst many sociopaths, and they're in my family. They're in my social sphere, so I will apparently be watching my back. No, I agree with you, but I just thought I'd cue up that question for some spicy controversy. But you know what? We don't need to talk about Christmas trees to talk about interesting things. We appear to have learned this week how at least one avenue that we are not going to use to overturn the Obergefell decision. The Supreme Court this week has decided not to take up the case by Kim Davis, who is the county clerk, the Christian county clerk from Kentucky, who sought exemptions from issuing marriage license in 2015 following Obergefell. Brothers, the court has said, hey, we're not going to take up this case right now, or maybe ever. What are your thoughts on this?
I think most of our listeners are probably familiar with some of this, but just for those who might not be, just a reminder, the Obergefell decision refers to the 2015 Supreme Court decision that made gay marriage a constitutional right across the country. It was an enormous thing when it happened, but now it's kind of just sort of baked in to our culture at this point. And what happened was, it was right after Obergefell was passed, you had this woman named Kim Davis, who is here in Kentucky, who was a clerk at, I guess it was the county clerk's office. And it was her job just to hand out marriage license. And she refused to do that. She would not issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. And she was citing her faith as the reason for not doing it. And so she was saying, based on my religious freedom, I shouldn't have to do this. And so she had this 10-year-long court challenge going on. And that challenge finally made its way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court has a process whereby they decide whether or not to hear a case. And so they decided that they were not. And this has been a surprise to some people because the court is largely regarded to be kind of a conservative court because of the three justices that Donald Trump appointed during his first term. And so there's a big question about, okay, why would this so-called conservative court that overturned the Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision, why would it, you know, refuse to take up a case like this with a chance to overturn Obergefell, especially when you look at the Dobbs decision, Clarence Thomas in his dissent, in his opinion on that decision, he argued that, you know, if we're overturning Dobbs, if we're overturning Roe, then we also need to revisit Obergefell because Roe and Obergefell were pretty similar. Mm-hmm. And so you had, you know, he said that in his concurring opinion on Dobbs. And then I think Alito's made perhaps maybe some remarks that he might be open to revisiting this as well. And so why would they do that? Because it takes four of them to vote to take up the case so that it could be, you know, they can hear all the oral arguments and then they can decide how they're going to rule on it. It only takes four justices and they didn't get one as far as I understand it. So the question is, was why did that happen?
Yeah, some court observers that are, you know, paying far closer attention to this than I do on a day-to-day basis do wonder if the Supreme Court, those conservative justices, are maybe waiting for a clearer case regarding more kind of, you know, foundational issues. So maybe Kim Davis's case wasn't the one that they wanted to, you know, stake the overturning of Obergefell on. And we should note that this was an unsigned opinion, so we're really not sure exactly who was on and who was off, this kind of thing. But in the run up to this non-decision, the decision not to take up this case, I did listen. I don't know if you guys caught that podcast with Ross Douthat, where he was interviewing Justice Amy Coney Barrett. And he was talking to her about, you know, judicial practice and, you know, ideology that forms the basis of how she makes decisions. And they did sort of allude to Obergefell and whether or not, you know, she would be willing to take it up. She was very noncommittal, you know, trying to be impartial, these kinds of things on the, you know, on the podcast. But one thing she did sort of allude to is the fact that some of these cases become so ingrained in national life, sort of the way that America becomes, so such that to overturn, you know, a decision like Obergefell would be to upset all kinds of, you know, social interactions, social situations. And I was reading a New York Times article on this refusal to actually take up this case. And they mentioned that in the past 10 years, get this, the number of same-sex couples in the United States has doubled. So now we're at 774,000 same-sex couples in the United States. And it seemed like Amy Coney Barrett was alluding to that fact. And she's like, well, if we were to overturn this, look at how many lives would be upset. That's not the kind of thing that makes a conservative happy, right? We want people to be thinking about, these justices to thinking about what is righteous, what is good, what is true, what is best for families, what is best for children, for societal flourishing. And we don't want to be looking at polls and data to make that decision. One other poll I'll point to is the Gallup one that sort of was released around the same time. And it showed a massive disparity in approval for same-sex marriage. The Democratic Party, as of this year, is at 88% support for gay marriage, whereas the Republican Party, their support has fallen to 41%, the lowest point since Obergefell was actually passed. So it peaked at like 55%. So a majority of Republicans in 2021 were supportive of same-sex marriage. Now that number is down to 41%. So what we're seeing is the parties and the country, right and left, really diverging on this issue. And it'll be interesting to see what that does in the future.
It's, you know, it's really kind of rich to say, and I saw some people making the same argument that, well, it's too ensconced in our national life to change it at this point. And I want to say, how could anything have been more ensconced than traditional marriage for the entire history of the country? Like, this is a very new thing. You know, most people, their historical perspective doesn't go past the end of their nose. And it's like it's like America didn't exist with the definition of marriage before 2015. I mean, come on. So this is the new thing. The new thing is the gay marriage. For the vast majority of our history, we had a very settled view on what marriage was all about. And this is a very new thing. So it's a little rich for them to come back and say, oh, no, it's too settled now. We can't change anything now. That's just, you know, I'm not buying that.
Whereas Obama himself ran in his first term on the platform of traditional marriage. Like, that's how new this thing is in America. And so people are, absolutely have historical amnesia.
You know, maybe I can provide some sunshine and lollipops here. I've not actually heard the Douthat Barrett interview, but I still am of the persuasion that the time is now for this kind of thing, given the makeup of our court. So Amy Coney Barrett may have made those comments, and I can see her saying, you know, it's very entrenched. And then once they get in here, oral arguments, if and when it gets to that point, you know, she decides to do the right thing. But, you know, I'm still hopeful with these kind of public statements that you hear from a guy like Justice Thomas, who even in 2020, when they rejected this Kim Davis case before, the very first line of their rejection was, the court read a right to same-sex marriage into the 14th Amendment, even though that right is nowhere found in the text. Like, that's his starting point of, hey, we're not taking this case, but let me just explain what I'm thinking here. Right. And then he says this to explain their denial of taking up that case. This petition implicates important questions about the scope of our decision in Obergefell, but it does not clearly present them. In other words, I really do believe that this is a situation where right now we probably have a pretty good court for this, but we just have the wrong case. And I don't know people behind the scenes and I don't understand the process completely, but you do need a really clear cut case that asks the right questions in the right way. So I'm hopeful that we can get that. Hopefully it doesn't take 50 years like the Roe decision.
Yeah, surely this isn't the end of it. But I mean, the fact that you did have so many justices willing to overturn Roe means that it's hard for me to imagine that if they're willing to do that, that they wouldn't on
That's
any,
right.
you know, they wouldn't revisit this, you know, despite what they're saying in public. They often hold their cards close to their vest. And so it's hard to know what they're thinking on it. I'm kind of hoping and, you know, initially I was disappointed, but then I heard some, you know, we're not legal analysts here. Okay. We're CBMW. We have a moral interest in all of this. So I'm sitting here in the cheap seats, you know, giving you please, everybody out there listening. I'm not a lawyer.
We're not giving legal advice.
This is not legal advice.
No, but so I'm actually telling you what I'm cheering for. What I'm cheering for is that they're just looking for a case with better facts.
And we do know of some of those developing. I mean, we're aware of other conservative organizations that are definitely kind of running that playbook all the way.
They're invested in it.
Again, trying to reach the Supreme Court. So this isn't the end of the story. You know, so we shouldn't see this as a permanent setback. You know, it might not be the outcome we wanted in this time now, but you know, there's still a lot of baseball to play.
Hey, let me give some good news here. The International Olympic Committee has recently discovered that men have physical advantages over women. Did you guys hear of this?
You know, yes. I only came to that conclusion after reading this, you know, 50-page report and years-long scientific study. Only then was I confident to really commit to the
grasp.
Fact that men are different than women. I mean, I'm so thankful for this researcher that spent all this time, this money to figure that out. But, you know, kudos.
Did they publish a report? I didn't actually see it.
It was cited. I didn't read the report. But they did cite Colin, this researcher. Yeah.
Colin, you're going to have to tell everybody. You had the best sort of response to this yesterday. It was so good that even Elon Musk liked your tweet.
That's true.
I just want this on the podcast that Elon Musk liked Colin's.
If there's
tweet
a way
yesterday.
For me to flash up this Far Side comic, I would do it. But go, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, go look it up. It's my favorite Far Side comic comic strip I've read. And what it is this picture of this these two cavemen, and they've constructed a massive microscope, and they've got a woolly mammoth up under it, and they're looking at this woolly mammoth. Now, there it is. Denny's putting it up there. And so this caveman is looking through this microscope. He's examining this woolly mammoth, and his conclusion is it's a mammoth. It is as early microscopes. And so, I replied to this Far Side, strip in response to Elon Musk, who, you know, was tweeting out the story. I think it was a Daily Mail link to the fact that the Olympic Committee has decided that men should not compete against women because men have a biological advantage against women. And so therefore they're going to – I know, right? Breaking
Trust
news.
Trust the science.
This is what we call natural law finding a way.
Men can jump farther than women. Men can run faster than women. Men can throw things further than women. I mean, the Olympic Committee, you know, they did their study and they concluded that that actually is true. And so Elon Musk had – posted that out with an emoji of a brain exploding, which, you know, is his way of saying no duh. And so I replied that, with that Far Side, and it still is getting a ton of views and clicks. And Elon Musk himself did. I think it was my first ever. He did like it. So Elon Musk saw that little strip.
You know what that
and
means?
I hope it goes far.
Colin, that means that you're famous adjacent.
That's right.
Famous adjacent.
That's right.
I'm waiting for all those Elon bucks to flow now.
You're getting your 15 minutes of famous adjacency.
That's right. That's right.
Well, what I did find hilarious about it, and then I believe it was a New York Times write-up about it that I read, but there is so much focus on, in what they're saying, on the scientific study, as if it took a scientific study to understand these things, right? The things that we all knew all along that Elon Musk sarcastically says, mind-blowing discovery that men and women have physical differences among others. You know, Denny, it's this situation's a little bit like what you just mentioned with the merit situation. We have one side saying, well, this is disrupting our way of life. You know, we have to really think about what's going to happen when we pull back so-called same-sex marriage. Where was we want to think, where was the thoughtfulness on putting it into the Constitution? And the same thing goes here. Where was the scientific study that was used to justify transgender athletes in the first place?
No, I don't think it was anywhere. I think it was ideology. This thing came into, you know, international sports competition, local sports competitions, collegiate sports. This came in not because of scientific studies, but because of ideology. That this idea that you are what you choose yourself to think of yourself to be. And then if you think yourself a woman, then you are one. And everybody else has to pretend that you are one, even if there are obviously, you know, physical differences, you know. And so we all think about the collegiate swimmer. Oh, my goodness. What's his name?
Leah Thomas.
Well, yeah, Leah Thomas, who was, you know, a male, but was, you know, posing as a female to swim with, you know, in the NCAA competition. And you're looking at that and, you know, everybody could see the absurdity of it, but you just weren't allowed to say so. And why weren't you allowed? Because of an ideological pre-commitment that says if you see physical differences between male and female, that those ideas are now thought crimes. You know, you can't say that out loud. It's hateful and bigoted to notice that. And so everybody should understand it wasn't science that got us into this. And it's not really science that's going to get us out. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the natural law, right? Mm-hmm. And just common sense, because you don't have to do some kind of far-reaching study with, you know, 50,000 plus participants to understand that men and women are different. They have reproductive systems that cause their bodies to form differently after puberty, causes men to have thicker bone mass and causes them to have bigger muscles. And so they're faster and stronger, and women don't have that. So, I mean, you don't need a science project for that. Everybody knew that. Your grandparents knew that. Your parents knew that. It's only in the last, 10 or 15 years that this became sort of popularly something that people are confused about. But I think common sense is prevailing here. Because it's not like the IOC is some kind of a like conservative organization, right? I think you're seeing enough pushback across the spectrum of ideological opinion that now some of these sports groups are having to recognize this and retreat.
You know, I read a Times of London write-up on this, and one of the things they cited was actually the fact that the Olympics are coming to America, Los Angeles, in 2028. And President Trump has banned, you know, this kind of competition. So they were talking about the conflict, you know, that potentially was setting up. And, you know, good on Trump for sort of forcing this question. But I thought one of the quotes from the IOC, one of the members, was really telling. So he was talking about, you know, this report. He said this report was very scientific, factual, and an unemotional presentation, which quite clearly laid out the evidence. I think that actually is sort of a tell, like how much of this has been just driven, like you said, by Denny, by ideology, but also just hysterics and emotion and sort of this kind of untethered empathy, instead of looking at, no, men and women are different. Their genetics are different. The biology is different. And this does make a difference. And it's not mean to say so. That's not me being hateful, but that was definitely the card that everybody was labeling anyone who opposed this kind of thing for the past 5-6 years. And so I loved it that this person said, well, this person came in and they were unemotional in their presentation of the facts. It's like, get the emotions out of there. Let's talk about the facts. And the facts prevailed in this case.
Yeah, I have a hard time thinking that this decision was purely the result of what so many of us have termed the vibe shift. Very thankful for all that's happening in our culture through the vibe shift. But I really do believe that Donald Trump's executive orders, that, you know, that array of memos he penned, are having an influence. This is maybe one of them. The New York Times mentioned the same thing, sort of, you know, buried in the near the end of the article as to what's going on here. We didn't, as we've talked about, we didn't just discover these truths, but there's this real practical reality that the Olympics in 2028 are going to be held in a country whose president is against transgender athletes, you know, by law, by order, however you want to term it. And so we, you know, each of us, according to our own station, we need to teach our children these things, teach them diligently. As pastors, we disciple our people. As citizens, we, you know, we need to seek justice and do good. All of these things have their effect. We should applaud them and just continue to teach these truths and see what effect the Lord might have through his grace in our society. All right, brothers, well, thank you so much for joining me today. To our listeners, you can learn more about our ministry at cbmw.org.